Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Alex Carey is standing by for us, the vice-captain of the Australian cricket team over in England for the Cricket World Cup, and he's back again on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Alex.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem, buddy. Great to have you on again. I want to know straight up, how much attention were you paying to the Bangladesh performance against the Windies last night? Because they put on a clinic.
Yeah, they sure did. I watched most of the run chase, and they played beautifully. So we take them on Thursday at in Nottingham in Trent Bridge. So we're really excited, obviously, to get back out and play. But they're playing some good cricket.
My word, they are. Could you believe how easy they did it and the way they went about it last night? 320 chase isn't easy any time, let alone in a World Cup. But they did it in 41 overs, Alex.
Yeah, they sure did. Halasan, Shakib's batting unbelievably at the moment. He's, you know, I think he's leading the runs in this tournament, and then they had other players chipping around. So, yeah, they're playing quite well, and obviously we've got to be on our game on Thursday to come out and play some good cricket and continue playing some good cricket. I think what we're doing really well is, you know, doing the basics really well. The batters up the top of the order are making the runs, and the bowlers are defending at the moment. So excited to get back out at Trent Bridge where we took on the West Indies. But they're playing good cricket, so we've got to come ready to play.
Alex, you've had a couple of days off since the last game. I was actually texting the captain a little while back. He said it's been a very, very busy start to the tournament. Have you been able to get out and about and just have a little bit of a mental refresh?
Yeah, it has been, Haysto. It's been quite a hectic little, probably 7-day block for us. But yeah, we got into Nottingham yesterday, had the full day off today, so it was nice just to go out and have a coffee and have a walk around the town and just, you know, I guess watch a bit of cricket. But yeah, no cricket commitments today, and then back into training tomorrow. So I'm sure Finch is, you know, pretty happy with himself resting up after that big 100. So and you know, the wives and the partners are starting to trickle over, which is great to see some familiar faces.
I bet you one man that sort of haven't been able to switch off is Steve Smith. He would have been shadow batting down the hallways, I'd imagine.
Yeah, he loves it. I was at coffee with him this morning, and he has a little air cricket bat with him. So he's playing beautifully. So whatever works for Smudge, keep doing that. He's playing beautifully. I mentioned Finchie, David Warner. It's great to see that, you know, those guys come back into this team and I guess dominate with a bat. Obviously Finchie's skipper and has been a part of it, but the other two are playing beautifully.
He's just shadow batting all the time. He's shadow batting on the sand. He's shadow batting in the shower. I'm not joking. Now, they are the words of the coach, Justin Langer. Why is he spying on players in the shower?
Yes.
It's a good question. Punter knows everything, though. He's a ripper. It's it is great to have Rick around the group. He, like I said, he knows everything about everyone. And I'm sure I think he actually roomed next to Smudge the other day and heard that tapping on the ground and before he went to the ground. So yeah,
you cannot get anything past Ricky Ponting. I guarantee you, the man does not sleep. He is up and about. He knows where everyone is at everyone's stage, and you just cannot get anything past him. It's extraordinary.
I agree with that. I agree. I met him for the first time during the T20 series, and I reckon he knew my game better than I knew my game. He's unbelievable. He knows every sport, every stat. But yeah, like I said, it's great to have him on tour with us, obviously working with JL and had and our bowling coach Griffo as well. So it's a great group of coaching staff that we've got with us.
How is Usman and Sean going? Because both of them are in this, they've sort of become victim of circumstances in a lot of ways. They are important players to the team. How do you sort of keep their levels of confidence up and so forth, considering the fact that there's going to be a time in the tournament where we're really going to need them to play well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, they know that as well. Usman Khawaja has just come off probably the white ball form of his life, India and the Pakistan series. So he's still playing beautifully. He's just, I think we've had opportunities to throw a Maxwell in or a Smudge in around circumstances in games. And the guys, to their credit, haven't, you know, they haven't they know it's a team thing, so they're well aware of that. And Sean Marsh is the same. He had limited opportunity last game to come out at the end. But again, he's batting really well. The guys are working really hard off the field. And like you said, you know, at the moment, Finch, Warner, Smith are making runs, but there's going to come a time where a Khawaja is going to stand up and, Sean Marsh is going to stand up and make some big runs. It was great to see Maxi come in and play his little cameo the other night. There's going to be opportunities throughout where guys will need to stand up, and they're playing beautifully, so there's no issues there.
What are you seeing from the bowlers? Because we were talking about this the other day, that as good as the batting was, for those that had gone to bed, there were some anxious moments there for a while, with Sri Lanka going at a million miles an hour through the first 25 overs. But then, again, we've seen Stark and Cummins come back and do things at really important times. What are you feeling about those two and also the other bowlers?
Yeah, Sri Lanka did. They come out with a serious bang. They played really well, so it's hard to stop two guys that have, I guess, gone out there pretty fearless, knowing they have to chase 330 plus. So they come out and they played really well. And for us to stop that charge and build the momentum back in our favour, and like you mentioned, the two boys, Stark and Cummins, they are bowling beautifully, and Richardson, Berendorf, Maxwell bowled really well, and not only in the Sri Lankan game, I guess the Pakistan game as well. I think we held our nerve there at the end. They had two guys that come out and played pretty hard, pretty aggressively, and Hassan Ali and Wahab Riaz, and for Stark to do what he does best, to wrap, you know, clean up the tail, was fantastic to see. And again, against Sri Lanka, he did that. So, it's World Cup cricket. There's always opportunities that come, and I think at the moment the group's just taken those little opportunities, and I think our bowling group's, you know, standing up to the pressure. That's for sure. And for our batters to put a good score on the board most games as well. So we've still got little improvements to make, definitely. Like you mentioned, we would like to start better than that with the ball. And, at times we'd probably like to finish off the Pakistan innings, our batting innings, a bit better. So there's still improvements to be made. Hopefully we start to get that perfect game later and building it into finals.
It's always the strive for the perfect game. And one man that I think might be able to give you a little bit of a push in the right direction will be Marcus Stoinis, if he is fit. Because I think just that fifth bowling option, he'd be able to, you know, really make an impact there. So how's he travelling? I noticed that he's going to have a fitness test, but the side can be one of those things that can take a long time to heal.
Yeah, it's a good question, hey. So he is really important in the side. I think you see the all-rounders play such a big part in terms of if it comes an opportunity with a bat, or, you know, those crucial 10 overs that you need as well. So he had a light bowl today, and then he'll have a better run around tomorrow at the main session. And obviously Nick Marsh is here, ready to go as well, who's in really good condition. So hopefully Marcus gets up. Like you said, it's such an important role, and he's done a great job for Australia over the past 12 to 18 months in that role. So, fingers crossed. But I guess for Maxi, he's always got really handy overs. And against Sri Lanka, he bowled his 10 overs and only went for in the 40s, which was really crucial for us. And then I guess it just helps to balance that all round. But saying that, I'll leave that up to the selectors in terms of what happens with Marcus, and hopefully he gets up for that.
With Maxwell, you're obviously behind the stump, so you've got the best view of all. Has he improved his bowling, or is it just that he's getting the opportunity? Because, he's got an important role to play as it stands at the moment in the Australian team.
Oh, he sure does. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I reckon he was the spinner in the last World Cup for Australia. Obviously, you had Shane Watson and James Faulkner and Mitchell Marsh played a few games. But I'm pretty certain that he was the spinner to go to during that World Cup. So he's got lots of experience. He's very competitive as well. So he gets into the contest. He sums up a batter pretty quickly. But he's I think his bowling's it is really handy for us, and I think it ideally you have that as an option, not as we need the 10 overs. But like I said, we went to him for his 10 overs, and he did such a good job. So you probably hate me saying this, but even Aaron Finch, he got a wicket against Pakistan. So there's an option there.
he takes it every chance he can get, the skipper.
Max's bowling, it is crucial for us. And like I said, there's options on the side too, for Zampa to come back in, a Nathan Lyon. Max's bowling well. Fingers crossed that the all-rounder comes up and there's an option there with some over some Glen.
The umpire was telling me to stay on the mark, and I didn't want to borrow that. I'll give you the hot tip.
One of the harder challenges of your football career is just being able to get yourself ready to play and beat your best week in, week out.
I don't really see it as a big deal, really. It's rumour and innuendo, and I've got nothing to do with it.
I think where we are is an accurate reflection of how we're performing.
I love the communication that the umpires have with the players. You know, when Razor gives someone a pat on the back, usually it's an experimental medalist just so he gets a bit of airtime, or like that.
Your ticket into the heart of football. Welcome to the Breakfast Club's Inner Sanctum.
Absolutely, welcome to the Sanctum. It's nice to have the big fella joining us again from the D's. Max Gorn, good morning to you.
I've been cut from the promo.
No, you were at the start.
Was I?
Yeah.
We've freshened it up. You've gone from the end to the start.
I actually liked the bit about where you were. You got it all done in 2-hour parking.
That was a little zinger, yeah.
A leg.
It was good to see Isaac Smith being serious in his bit.
He's a serious man. Very serious man, Isaac. He's copped some feedback in the last 24 hours.
He did get a little bit of feedback.
We'll talk about that, actually. I want to talk about that a little bit later on. But you look refreshed. You look rejuvenated. You look ready to go, re-energised.
It's amazing what 4 days can do. I stayed in Melbourne for the first time for a while.
Did you?
Usually I take off. Went back to my hometown in Ormond. went there. Everyone goes home, so I went home as well.
Ormond.
No, it was good. I just
what's the weather like in Ormond?
Very similar to Bentley. it was a good couple of days.
Nice. So, what is it more for you? Is it physical or mental?
To be honest, I love the game and love what I do, so the mental side of it doesn't really seem to bother me as much. I still watch the footy. I even watched that St Kilda Gold Coast game on Saturday Arvo, which was an interesting game to watch, but I managed to get through that on my bye, which is that means I really do love the game.
It was a difficult watch, the first half particularly.
So more of a physical one probably for me.
Do some of the other boys get away? How many official days off do you get from the club? You don't have to turn up to the footy club at all.
Thursday to Sunday.
Yep.
So it's not. It's just a long weekend, really. Mm. The majority of people go home. We don't have many Vic Metro boys.
Yep.
So everyone either goes back to the country where they're from or flies out, goes to South Australia, WA. We've got a lot of Queensland boys, which is quite surprising. I usually go to Byron. I just didn't go this year. I follow a few AFL players on Instagram, and there was too many in Byron for my liking, so I didn't want to go up there.
Get handed by the other players.
Yeah.
Hey, Big Maxie, come hang with us.
Yeah, get to the beach hotel.
Again.
Have another pot.
Standard.
Again. We wouldn't do that. Hey, What have you done mentally again from the playing perspective? I'm not sure if we asked you this last week or not, or 2 weeks ago. Do you have a half year assessment? Because I think last year you did, didn't you?
Usually. It's a great chance for the coaches to sit down and assess how everything's gone, and even the club wide to sit down and assess how everything's gone. And obviously, ours hasn't been too good, so you normally scrutinise that a little bit more. So.
Is that a formal process?
No, not really, no. There hasn't even really been a presentation to the players about what came from those meetings. I'm sure they'll just secretly bring it in throughout meetings and we won't ever know that there was a change. So, so the coaches have their bye as well, so they're probably gone for the 4 days.
Yep.
But they do something on the Wednesday, arvo, just before they leave.
Right. And do you think that they need it probably more than the players at some times?
Yeah, Goody does. Yeah, he needs his family time because when footy's on, he doesn't see him at all. Slash talk to them when he's even at home. So he needs a break, and he's obsessed with footy, and it's good to see him get some days off and come back refreshed. You can even see that they're all nice and refreshed and ready to go. Because I mean, coaching would be probably not for me. It's one of the harder things to do in terms of coding when you're at home. The job never stops when you're coaching, and Goody's also a 24-hour phone call for us.
Yep.
So, yeah, coaching never stops.
So how often would you make contact outside of club hours with Goody? How often would you do that?
It's more when Goody calls me, to be honest.
That's never a good sign.
Yeah, it's not as bad as the Clarko Birchall story, which is a great story. But,
I don't think I've heard the Clarko Birchall story.
Clarko dropped off a puppy real late at night one day, thinking he needed a puppy, and he didn't.
What? Yeah, I don't know this story.
He thought Birch was struggling with his responsibilities or so on, and thought maybe a little puppy would help him, and the puppy shat and bit everything around the house. 24 hours later, the puppy ended up back at Clarko's house. So Goody's not that bad. Well, he hasn't given me a puppy yet. But yeah, so most senior coaches would be the same. They'd all do those phone calls late at night, and their mind's always ticking over.
How is he going?
Taking it back by the puppy.
Yeah. Clarko was really quite happy with it, I think, too. He thought he'd done a really good thing. How is Goody going? Because one of the issues you've got is actually an execution thing, not necessarily a game plan thing, with the issues of having forward of centre. I would imagine he would be getting quite frustrated with things, but how does he not show it? Or how does he get away with that? Or what does he do?
He's not showing his frustrations too much yet, as much as most coaches do. We won 16 games last year, and he's showing similar frustrations post-wins, post-losses. So it's a credit to him to be able to keep his game face the whole way, because I know it would be frustrating him deep down that some of the basic skills that we're training when we're 11, 12, 13, and even still now, we go for our fundamentals and we're probably performing as worst as any side has this year in terms of actually kicking the ball to our teammates or executing the simple parts of our game plan. So it is quite annoying, and it's definitely frustrating as a player. I can only imagine what it's like sitting up in the box. But once again, because he's not showing those frustrations, we're able to train it without any anxiety. And anxiety is the new big word for millennial footballers these days, and if something does get drilled into you, sometimes it can build up some sort of anxiety around delivering that skill. So the ability to be able to coach it without showing how frustrating and how much it actually is hurting us makes you be able to train it more freely.
Do you think it has got to that point with the players that it has become a real mental issue, that kick inside 50, the shot at goal? We saw a situation on the Queen's birthday weekend where players were 40 metres out trying to pass it. So made it someone else's problem. Do you think it has got to that point with your team?
I tried to pass it from 10, but the siren went, so I had to go back and kick it, unfortunately. Actually, no one stood the mark. That's what put me off. They were all shaking their hands. I'm still kicking here, guys.
Guys,
stay with me. Hang on. I'm going to kick this through.
No, it's the goal kicking one is a different debate in itself. I think goal kicking is a different skill to the other 10 that we're working on. So there is a bit of a mental game there, and some of our best kicks are the guys that are struggling at the moment. And Tom went through a terrific patch of goal kicking, and now all of a sudden he's struggling a little bit. And the amount of work you do at training tends to go hand in hand with your skill development, but for goal kicking it doesn't seem to be the case. You can put in as much goal kicking practice, but as soon as you get into the actual moment, you only get one shot compared to the 50 at training. You just got to nail that one. So there's a bit of mental side around goal kicking, but the skill base, I think the way we're coached is helping it. Obviously not showing out on game day at the moment, but the way we're coached in the way Goody does it makes it a lot easier to train it.
What did you make of the combination you had down back last against the Magpies on Quinn's birthday, because you had Stephen May come back in or play his first game. Jack Lever was back in, and you had who else came back in? Matty Hall came back in. So it was a really different combination from your defensive end. What did you make of the way that worked together?
Yeah, we had four in. Salem came in as well. He was a bit crook up in Darwin. In fact, he was incredibly crook. He tried to convince the coaches he could play in Darwin, and 5 minutes before the game, he got pulled out, and then couldn't even sit in the game in the stands to watch. So that's how sick he was. He left at quarter time, and Darwin Heat can do that to some people. But Schooner May, Jackie Lever, and Marty Hall—they're Mark Oppo type players, which is obviously the sexy word in defence at the moment. And all three of them are really good at reading the play. And unfortunately, Frosty got injured on the weekend in the first quarter, but it would have been good to see how they all gelled together. Mm. So. It's exciting what Steve and Jake can potentially bring for us in the back half of this year.
Was it important that they finally got out there together, just from your group perspective?
I mean, chemistry has to come at some point, and we're at a point in the season where we need to win. And do we play Frosty and Steve rather than play Jake because it's a chance of winning more because they played more together? Or there's all these different little methods that you could go, but in the end, we need Steve and Jake playing a lot of footy together and knowing each other's quirks and how they defend. And I say the quicker we can get them in, the better. And Goody listened to that. I said I didn't sit on match committee last time I was here, but I managed to get some sort of word in there that I wanted both of them out there, and they did.
Mission accomplished.
Correct.
Nice work. Nice work indeed. What about your approach now? How are you approaching this second phase of the season? You're 3-9. Just individually, what are you trying to get out of it from here?
It's gone a long way past any sort of individual goals. It's purely team focused, and 3-9 is not a great place to be sitting. And as a leader, I'm pretty embarrassed in the position our club's in at the moment in terms of ladder, but completely opposite feeling when I get the sense of how we're going from a day-to-day, Monday to Friday type setup. And I'm proud of how the group has faced adversity this year, and we just got to start winning, and that's obviously the focus, and we've got to win 17 out of the next 10 to play finals. It's getting worse and worse every week. But it's
seemingly a challenge.
It starts with Frio this week, and once we get one win, I feel like we can potentially get on that roll, but we've just got to jump over that barrier.
Is it tough to continue to front up and keep saying the same sort of thing? Because I know how hard it is when you're losing games throughout a season. It can be tough to just keep fronting up and going, you know, we're doing all the right things, we're trying our backside off. We think we're on the right track. Now we just got to win week in, week out. I just found that one of the toughest things to deal with.
I get bored of myself when I catch myself saying literally the same cliche answer every time. And the truth is our club and our players and our playing group has a really good feel about it. But at the moment, we can't really say that because we're 3-9 and we're failing in the worst parts of a football game in terms of hitting a kick and kicking goals. And so it is disappointing when you can't come out and sort of talk about how well things are going at the club and where the club differs from where it was in 2010. But we got to win games, and that's the reality of it. So we got to beat Frio, and then I don't even know who we got the week after. That's how much it's week at a time.
Baby steps. I must admit, I've been watching you obviously closely through the year with your involvement with our program, and even the last couple of weeks. When it clicks, I think it's going to be quite strong. It's just, I don't know what I would, if I was Simon Goodman, I'd have no idea how to get you over the line for the next little while, because everything seems okay until that last section, that last phase of play.
See, aren't you going for the head Carlton kick?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Definitely just not after that comment.
No, correct.
That's not going to get you the senior gig, is it?
Up until then, I was.
As soon as we lose, I've got no idea what to do.
Because I've been watching you closely.
It's
pretty good.
Well, the reason is because it's not an effort thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that would frustrate Melbourne fans.
But it doesn't seem a system thing either. That's because it's an execution. You said before.
Yeah.
Seemingly, most of it is execution late.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, with Hasto in here, it's like you're in a cricket situation. You're getting the opportunities, but you're dropping catches. Like, it's just one of those things at the moment that they are unforced errors a lot of the time.
And
you're catching the ball at training and you're doing it right at training, you know you're on the right path, but it's just breaking down.
All you can do is train it.
smash it in the nets. You're creaming them in the nets and you're getting out in the game. It's a similar sort of situation, isn't it? It's hard because you've got to keep trying to front up and find a way to try and improve and try and get better and show the fans that you're on the right direction. But a lot of people don't know what happens inside the four walls at a sporting organisation, and that's the hardest thing, I reckon. He's just trying to keep fronting up and going, no, we're on the right track, and getting the fans believing it as well.
The one question I wanted to ask you, and I want to sort of move on and talk about other things because I'm a bit like you, kind of get bored of talking about the same thing. But do you think it was a situation, because a lot of people have said, oh, Melbourne just thought it was going to happen, that the last season we're just going to roll into this season, you picked up Stephen May, you're going to be better than last year, and it was just going to happen. What do you say to those critics that say that?
I absolutely hate it. So I did Captain's Day, so majority of the talking was from some of my quotes. And if they're going to ask, you've made a prelim final, what's the goals this year? Of course I'm going to say we want to improve. And to improve, that obviously means, one, turn up to a prelim or play in a grand final. So that's always going to be what I'm going to say externally. We knew that we had to improve, and sides in recent years that have made a really good finals run have dropped off straight away, and that was the challenge that was facing us. And at the moment, we've probably failed the challenge. But that's at the moment. We've still got 10 games to go. We've still got some chances to improve. And there's been lots of talk about maybe we drank our own bath water or set our expectations too high. But, I mean, what else am I going to say when they ask me, what are you going to do? You made a prelim last year. What's the goals this year? Preferably, I'd like to finish 15th. Just to have a year off and focus on 2020.
That would be a headline.
Yeah.
If you're after headlines, that would be the one. It is interesting with the Demons. We did a section on the Demons in the award-winning By the Numbers podcast last week with Daniel Hoyne from Champion Data. And some of the interesting feedback that he gave was that post-clearance, I'm not sure if you talk about pre and post-clearance at the club. I'm sure you do with your midfield brigade. Post-clearance is the issue for the Demons in terms of disposals and contested possessions outside of the clearance. That's your 14th and 10th in those categories, contested possessions and disposals. But in modern footy is a forward half game. And your second in time in forward half and your third in forward half turnovers. So that suggests that there is plenty of opportunities and you're going to get your look. It's just about that last little phase of play that seems to be stopping the D's at the moment. And the Fremantle Dockers will this week fill the rut.
Probably a little bit banged up at the moment, but like everyone coming in the pie, everyone sort of likes to have that bye, and so we need a little bit of a spell. I mean, ours is a really short bye. We've got 10 days. We play Essendon at Marvel on a Thursday night.
That is the coach of the GWS Giants, Leon Cameron. Boys are a bit banged up, he said, and looking forward to this break that they've got in the schedule for a couple of days anyway. Brett Deledio is our man from the Giants around the grounds in Sydney. He joins us this morning. G'day, Lids.
Morning, fellas. How are we going?
Going very well, thanks. I was thinking of you when Leon Cameron said that because I was wondering how banged up you were considering you haven't played all the year yet. You've been working to get your body back right, and now you are back and firing, and I thought you might have been a bit annoyed that the buy's coming this time because you're pretty hot to trot at the moment.
Yeah, spot on, mate. I'm furious. Although I do, you know, the ageing body does enjoy a break. It's when I had 6 weeks off there at the start of the season, mate. So I'm, you know, ready and raring, but enjoying a bit more family time more than anything, probably, mate. Just kicking back and spending some time with my girls.
But can you sense in your teammates that it's the right time for them?
Yeah, I think we've had a few boys that had a pretty significant workload at times just because of a couple of injuries and whatnot. You know, Timmy Turano, I think, would really enjoy the break, and Jacob Hopper have had a big workload in the middle. Stevie Kingleo as well. So we'll welcome the break and you know, reset, recharge, and look forward to the second half of the year.
How significant was the win against North Melbourne? We talked about it yesterday about it was a really tough game in that first half, and you were able to find a way to break clear in the second half and play some really good footy.
Yeah, you're right, Whitey. I think it's we knew it was going to be a real fight, and you know, they've been playing some pretty handy footy. You know, Reece has got them playing some you know, really strong footy around. They attack the contest, and you know, they play to their strengths. That's for sure with their big bodied midfielders. So our boys were certainly up for it, and you know, it was good to see that we could hold on, especially not at home. You know, scores were level,
half time, and it was good that we could put the foot down and match their intensity around the footy, but then go on with it and kick away. And I know I kicked about two or three goals late, but the game put to bed by that stage, I think.
What's on coming up, Leeds? Enjoy a bit of a break. I'm sure you'll be tuning in to watching the Aussies over in the World Cup, knowing you.
Yes, mate, absolutely. No, at the moment, mate, I'm getting prepared for ballet classes with my eldest, so that's going to be super. Why do you laugh? We've got another 10-day break post our Essendon game, so I'll stay down and catch up with some friends and family, and the girls will be down there as well. So I'll get a bit of R&R in while they're away, and just enjoy some time to myself more than anything, probably.
Lidge, you had a great story down there. Jake Stein, former Commonwealth Games decathlete, who you got in that little rort rule we can get.
Category B. That's it. Rorts, unless you're not involved, Scotty.
Great story, because it's taken him a couple of years to make it.
Yeah, it certainly has, Scotty. Look, he's been incredibly persistent. I must admit, when Jakey first started down there, that it was, you could see how raw he was and how green he was, but he puts in the work. There's no doubt about that, and he's... athletic capabilities. Look, he certainly doesn't run like Mark Butzabs, that's for sure, but his power and his strength and ability to get a job done is as good as anyone, and that's, it's a real credit to him and Greater Western Sydney, I suppose, to produce a product like that for us, and he certainly reaped the benefits on the weekend and enjoyed his first win, that's for sure.
Once again, mid-season, one of your star players, contracts, every year you get it, but Stephen Coniglio is the one this year. He's the sort of personality like Kelly that will just cruise through this, or how do you think it'll play out?
I think, again, he'll probably just cruise through it. We can only put as much heat on him as possible, especially us blokes that are out of contract, to try and get something done. he's going about it in his own time. He's got every right to do that, but I think, speaking to Wayne and to Leon, that they're reasonably confident with where the club sits, but you never know, do you? We'll wait and see. But I've texted him plenty of times and spoken to him plenty of times to tell him how much I really enjoy playing with him. And if he could just give me a chop out, because I've got a family to provide for, that we could get that done sooner rather than later.
Do players worry about it when there's reports in the paper today that he's going to be down in Melbourne during his bye round talking to clubs? Is that just water off a duck's back now for players? Or when you read that as a teammate, you go, oh, gee, okay, this is getting serious now?
No. I think the boys knew that he was going to Melbourne before the papers did. So that's almost the first thing that he gets ribbed on. It's water off a duck's back. As you said, I think it's just part of the way that the game's played these days. And it'd be silly not to do his due diligence and see what else is out there. But as I said, I think we're pretty confident that he'll make the decision to stick around and play some footy for the long term at the Giants.
Well, as long as there's some left in the kick for you, as you say, that's the important thing about all this. Can't be selfish for Stephen Coniglio. You get the job done for you. Get a chance to have a rest, mate. Enjoy that. And back next week with full steam ahead, because the Giants are going beautifully, 9-4 at this stage of the season. And things are going very, very nice. Looking forward to seeing what happens in the back end at the Bombers next Thursday night to kick off round 15 is your next assignment. Good luck, Lids. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, fellas.
Next year, take my talents to the NBL play for the Illawarra Hawks.
Excellent. Over in Australia?
Yep.
Absolutely. Why did you decide this is the way to go for you?
I just think it's the best route for me. I'm trying to be the number one pick for the 2020 draft, so I heard they got great strength and conditioning over there, so off the court, that'd be good, and then on the court, pros been through there, stuff like that, so I think it's all going to help. It's just best for me, I think.
It's big news for Australian basketball. That is the voice of LaMelo Ball, who has been touted as a future potential number one draft pick in the NBA, and he has chosen to play in Australia in the NBL next year, or next 2 years is the deal, at the Illawarra Hawks, if you don't mind. Jeremy Lolliger, the CEO of the NBL, will be tickled pink with this news, and he joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Jeremy.
Good Good morning, guys. Thanks very much for your time. And, yeah, it's certainly a fantastic announcement.
How did this happen? We had RJ Hampton a couple of weeks ago announce that he's off to the Breakers as part of the program, the Next Stars program. And now LaMelo Ball, whose family's big business in the NBA, and, of course, he's a top prospect from high school. How did this happen, Jeremy?
Well, it's not been a short negotiation, I can tell you that much. But look, with this Next Stars program is really designed at identifying guys who perhaps don't fit the traditional mold and are seeking out for themselves an alternative pathway to the NBA. And for RJ Hampton, he really had every choice in the world laid out before him. For LaMelo, it was a little bit more limited because he didn't have the option of college on the table because he'd played professionally once before in Lithuania.
Yep.
So he had to choose a pro league to go and play in, and so it was a matter of us putting our best foot forward and demonstrating that we think we're a great avenue for him to really get himself best prepared for the draft in 2020.
So how did that come about then, Jeremy? You just roll up and pitch to him, or is he very much getting on the front foot and looking around the rest of the world for somewhere to, you know, enhance his craft?
Yeah, after LaMelo signed with CAA, which is the agency that his brother Lonzo signed with, it became a two-way process. They were reaching out, putting out feelers to us after they heard that we were taking some pretty high-profile players. And then I spoke with his agent a number of times. I actually went to Los Angeles to see him work out probably 2 months ago now and get a sense myself of whether or not this young man really wanted to take the next step to the next level and get himself ready for a lottery pick opportunity in the 2020 draft. And everything that he did there on court, everything that he did off court, made me believe that he was a really hard worker and someone who had a real opportunity to flourish in the NBL.
So how does it end up him playing at Illawarra? What's the process there, Jeremy? We had, and I'd like to know the same thing with RJ too, and the Breakers, but yeah, how does that happen?
Yeah, they were two very different processes because the guys from New Zealand were in discussions with RJ. They started talking with RJ probably 6 months ago, about the same time that we started talking with his camp. And so they had been building a roster around the prospect of potentially bringing him on board and keeping that spot primarily for him. Whereas Illawarra, it was a little bit more a matter of finding the club who had the best opportunity to fit LaMelo. And when I say fit, that's a whole number of things. It's culture, it's opportunity on court, it's the teammates that he'd be playing with. And what we really liked about Illawarra, and I say we, this is LaMelo's camp and myself, was that they have a legacy of developing young talent that's gone on to play in the NBA and in Europe for that matter. They have a young roster where we think he's going to flourish against other young men in a similar position, particularly guys like Emmett Nahr, Dan Greeter, Sunday Deck, three Australians who are also trying to get their opportunity in the NBA. And that's another great aspect of this, is that LaMelo will draw a lot of attention to those guys and to the other young players here in the NBL who hopefully will get their opportunity also. So we think it's a great fit, and I'm sure he'll come a long way very quickly.
They're a bit of a brand, the Ball family. Lonzo, obviously the Lakers at the moment, looks like he's been traded to New Orleans for the Anthony Davis deal. But the father, LaVar's very business savvy. Does that come with it?
That's a good question. It hasn't been part of the negotiations whatsoever. We haven't had anything to do with the family, to be perfectly honest. It's all been dealt with through CAA, and this has been a very straight up and down professional negotiation like you'd expect with any pro athlete. So look, CAA don't mess around. They're, as I said, they're the biggest in the business over in the US as far as I'm aware. And I know that the fellow who's coming with LaMelo is his sort of mentor, is a guy by the name of Jermaine Jackson. He's very close to the family, but he's very much a basketball guy. He's not a business guy. He's a former NBA point guard himself, and he'll be taking on the role of making sure that Melo gets everything out of this opportunity that he needs to.
Now, one of our number one draft picks is Cameron White, is our World Cup analyst. He's been good enough to jump in the studio with us with coffees this morning again. Whitey, good morning.
Morning, Huff. How are you?
Okay, very well, thank you. The White with One was magnificent. Are you getting much sleep at the moment, Whitey?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm relying on the highlights a little bit. I would be lying if I said that I wasn't. So, but no, I'm obviously watching as much as I can, and then trying to get a little bit of kip in between.
What's your learned eye telling you about this contest at this competition at the moment? Is there breakout teams? Are there teams that cannot achieve anything for the rest of this tournament, or are there four or five standouts? Or what's the look from your perspective?
Well, definitely, I think my top pick, half at the start of the tournament, India, I think is still the standout.
Yep.
Undefeated, they're winning very easily. You know, defeated Pakistan comfortably in Duckworth. Can't even spit that out. Lewis method.
Enough sleep,
the other night. So I think they're still the favourites and the team to beat for me. You know, England have now, you know, I think they're still the bookies' favourites, but got a few injury worries. Mm. And I'm just not 100% sure about England's bowling. Their batting is very dangerous, but that's just wait and see on them. But I think, obviously, the top four is starting to sort itself out a fair bit as well. I think there's a pretty big game coming up, Australia v Bangladesh. I reckon that's basically, you know, if Australia win that, I think that's the top four almost done and dusted there. So that means, you know, we're basically looking at their semi-finals pretty much already.
So basically, last night's performance by Bangladesh was pivotal for the remainder of the competition.
Yeah, it's basically, I think, that's what I mean. If Australia beat Bangladesh, that takes care of, you know, probably them for the top four. And, you know, the West Indies, well, like we said before a ball was bowled, that you just don't know what you're going to get. Yeah. Sometimes you can get brilliant. And last night, as you can see, Bangladesh knocked them over, you know, chasing 332 in 40, just over 40 overs, which is an amazing run chase. So, which, you know, on the flip side, makes this next game for Australia pretty dangerous. But West Indies, you just never know. It's either, you know, you can get brilliant or nothing.
New Zealand's an interesting one for me, Half.
I'm with you.
They've hardly even started their tournament.
Does anyone know they're playing?
I know, that's the thing. Like, they've been washed out against India, and then they come up against South Africa on, when are they playing South Africa?
Friday night, correct.
Tomorrow night. Sorry. And then, so we'll get a bit better of an indication of how they're tracking in the next little bit if the weather stays fine. So that they could come into calculations, or they could fall away. So that's a pretty important space of games for New Zealand as well.
They had the St Kilda draw. They had the easy teams first and sort of banked some wins, and they had the washout against India, which was really handy. But they've still got a tough run, but they've maybe even banked enough already to get themselves into semi-final.
Three wins already, yep. Yeah. And the washout, 7 points.
But so Pakistan and the West Indies, who we all thought were their temperamental teams that were dangerous on their day, they now don't look like they're going to be a factor. Unless now, with no pressure on, they can cause an upset against one of the better teams.
Well, that's the thing with this particular, the way the tournament's set out, there's just eight, you know, there's no knockout stage or anything like that. It's just eight games and top four go through. So it just gives the best teams every opportunity to finish in the top four. And to me, that's probably what looks like happening.
Just going back to the India side of things, I think the way that they've actually played, but it's more so that fifth bowling option and that all-rounder option. Hardik Pandya has come back into their side after being injured and being out and didn't play against Australia over in India, and he's just an absolute superstar. So I think it just highlights the need for us, the Australian cricket team, to just sort of nut down that fifth bowler and that all-rounder option massively.
So what do you think, Cam, they should do? Because obviously, Stoinis, we talked to Alex Carey this morning. He's back bowling slowly, but he's bowling.
Well, this is an interesting point because I'd be interested to get John's point of view here because, John, you've had a few side injuries over your career. Mm. I'd be shocked if Marcus Stoinis plays as a bowler in this tournament again.
Me too. And speaking to Alex this morning, I was just sort of had in the back of my mind, he had a bowl yesterday, but I don't know. There's a difference between getting through having a bowl at training and then ramping it up and really getting some energy on the ball and trying to nail your Yorkers and your slow balls. It's almost near impossible. If he's done it even a little bit, it's the sort of thing where you sit around and you cough and you can feel it. It's not a nice thing, especially when you're trying to bowl and bowl Australia to a World Cup victory as well. So I'd be very surprised. I'm with you, Whitey.
So you've got to rule him out and bring Mitch Marsh in?
Yep.
Yeah, but I don't think Mitch will play, even if that's the case. I think almost, it looks to me, where the last lineup we went with, I think that's, you know, we're just going to go against the conditions maybe, because as we sort of talked about before the tournament started, we're expecting the wickets to get, you know, as this tournament goes on, so it goes over a long period of time, the wickets to get a bit slower, maybe take a bit more turn. But it seems to me we don't have the all-round option. I'm not sure they'll be confident bringing Mitch Marsh straight in off the plane, so we're going to go with Maxwell to bowl 10 overs and 4 quicks.
I've got a suspicion that Alex may have just sort of dropped a little secret to us earlier, unintentionally.
What did he say?
When he said, well, in the last World Cup, we just had Maxwell as our spinning option and we just played, you know, three fast bowls and Faulkner outside the top six.
Well,
maybe that's just maybe that's what the talk is around the camp. Well, we've done it before, we can do it again.
It's a bit better of a percentage over here in Australian conditions, bigger grounds. I think over in England they can get hold of Maxie, and we've seen that the Indians did it to him as well. But I'd just rather have that extra fifth bowling option with an all-rounder. But if you don't have the luxury, then that's the way they'll
go. Yeah, and without the all-rounder, how do we get, if we wanted to play, if we come up against a team with left-handers, how do we get Nathan Lyon in the team as well? Yep. So I think now it seems as though they've lost a bit of faith in Adam Zampa. It seemed like he was the, he was the flavour before the tournament started, and 3 games later, you know, he's gone. So
it's bizarre.
Can they go back to Adam now? I'm not really sure.
So is that based on what he did against India?
Maybe just a combination of, you know, lack of confidence in him across these first, you know, 4 or 5 games that they've played in now. So we said in our initial sort of preview that I thought he was going to be the key, whether he could hold down those middle overs, go at low runs per over and, you know, pick up a wicket or two. He got a few wickets in the first couple of games, but still went, you know, at 6, 7 and over. And then obviously that Indian game probably hurt his chances. So can they go back to him? I'm not sure. I don't think they'll go back to, you know, if Marcus Stoinis has ruled out Mitch Marsh. So still the same sort of issues for them, you know, start of the tournament to, you know, now up to game 6. So who knows?
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.